Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, it is the Red Men Originals podcast. We are here, me, Paul Beach and Chris Page, Chloe Bloxham, Dan Club. We're going to be catching up on what's been going on with the Reds this week, and then in part two we're going to be discussing priorities, just life priorities more than anything else, but maybe some transfer stuff as well. Let's dive in. We start with the under-21 Euros, Curtis Jones, Harvey Elliott. Curtis Jones winning England... the Euro under-21s.
Strike.
I mean, the vision, Chris, the creativity required to generate that kind of finish.
The timing.
Yeah.
The timing, you know, really getting his arse in there at the exact point of...
Listen, Steven Gerrard scored a very similar goal for Chelsea in the League Cup final, is that right? I was really hoping it was going to be an absolute screamer, and it was good awareness.
I love the fact that he's claiming it and everyone else is celebrating with the lad who took the free kick.
Mm.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, me. And I was like, no.
It's like when you used to play knockouts as a kid and you were the last one in and someone that you deflect someone's shot in and you just run away celebrating it, hoping you'd get let through. It's good for him. I mean, if nothing else, he seems like he had a boss time. He looks to have been one of, if not England's best players in the tournament. I said on a video...
Did he get like the last three man in the matches or something?
Definitely the last two. Yeah. But I said the weird difference between him and Harvey Elliott was Elliott actually could have done with playing less football, which he did, and Curtis Jones really needs to play football to play catch-up, so it ended up being potentially a perfect tournament for both of them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and just the fact that like everybody's cottoned on to how good Curtis Jones is now, and not just in the Liverpool scene, but obviously just more in football and stuff. I've seen so many fans of other clubs on Twitter talking about how good he's been and how, you know, head and shoulders, best player in the side and stuff. And that's the confidence that he needs to be able to take into this season coming up, because I imagine before the tournament started, or as the tournament was starting, when Liverpool were signing those midfielders, his confidence was probably pretty low, to be honest with you. I mean, two lads that we think are going to be playing in his position, and you're away from it and you're missing the first part of pre-season because of it. You know those lads are going to join probably before you do. You need to put a marker down, and Curtis Jones was able to do that, which tells me that mentally he's really strong as well.
Yeah, I'm just really pleased for him, Chloe. You know, it's been a tough old time. It's been a tough 18 months, 2 years for him, really, when he should have been kicking on. He's had his progress hampered by random injuries. So he ended the season brilliantly. He's carrying on brilliantly in this way. And hopefully he's just able to bring that on when he does turn up for pre-season training, actually hungry for the fight instead.
Yeah, and he'll also be going into pre-season with the confidence of, well, Jürgen Klopp, surely you've just watched me be man of the match, be player of the tournament here for England, who've gone and won it. And he'll be thinking about Alexis McSorley. What is making a ridiculous noise?
Shut up! That is a cat.
What is that noise?
Screaming.
No, he's still going, it's so good. No, he's going to go into pre-season and he's going to look at Alexis McAllister and he's going to go, you're my competition, but I'm going to make it fun. I'm going to make it interesting. This isn't competition that's going to hinder me, because I will get me opportunities because I've got Europa League, because we're not in the Champions League all the time. There'll be rotation, there'll be FA Cup. So he knows he's going to get a chance, but he's got really tough competition, and hopefully that motivates him.
Yeah, he's going to come in. Alexis McAllister's going to have his World Cup winners medal, and he's going to yell at, but
Euro under 21.
Did it without Messi in my side as well.
Did it with Anthony Gordon playing as a false nine in front of me. I have a bit of that. Dan, I'm going to say this statement. I'm not sure it's totally the reality of the situation, but that shirt is his at the moment. We've brought McAllister in. We all presume he's going to come in straight away, because why wouldn't you? World Cup winner, Premier League experience, he's the right age profile for it. But I don't think Curtis Jones will think that way, whether rightly or wrongly. He will be very much, I ended the season, it'll be his mission to make sure that he starts the season, and that this won't hurt.
No, not at all. He's a lad who's backed himself pretty much since day one, and you're right to sort of allude to his injury problems have very much curtailed his development, because he burst onto the scene like very few have done before with that Derby goal, obviously, and he kind of, his performances thereafter when he was dropped into the side were of a lad who was full of confidence, just wanted to get on the ball, wanted to make things happen, because he was like that all through the age groups. He was the kid, he was the one, he captained the side, give him the ball, he'll go make something happen. So it's no shock to me that he will come back into pre-season whenever he does after this little break that he's gonna rightly have now, and he'll be thinking, I'm still the one who's in possession of that shirt, give it to me, and he'll back himself all the way to beat Alexis McAllister in this little battle. The reality situation is it probably is gonna be McAllister for the most part. You will see Curtis Jones in certain matches and certain games, he'll come in to replace McAllister occasionally, but I think the competition for places, and to have such healthy competition for places, is massive for us. Like, how many times last season did our midfield pick itself, and not in a good way? Yeah. Like, in years gone by, you could say, it picked itself because those three are boss.
Thiago looks and goes,
yeah, last year, it was like the three that were left standing, go and do it. And it's going to be, hopefully, the complete opposite coming into this season. That's huge. So, yeah, but on the Jones thing, I made up, he's had a really good end to the season, boss tournament here, and it's exactly what he needed. But I think Curtis Jones at full tilt is a lad who, like I said earlier, absolutely backs his ability 100%. He's confident, he's cocky, he's arrogant. He's all the things you'd expect him to be and want him to be, because that's when he's at his best. And like I say, it's only a good thing for us, this and the fact that we are going to have actual options in midfield.
He had the highest passing percentage in the entire tournament with players over 300 minutes played, which is absolutely outrageous, just to set falling apart behind everyone. Which was like, this is a lad who, you know, last year towards the end of the season was probably the it man in midfield for us. And also on top of that, you know, we've mentioned McAllister starting, but Jürgen loves to bleed these players in at the very beginning, so it wouldn't surprise me if Curtis Jones's name is on the left hand side of the midfield come the first day of the season, just to take the pressure off McAllister and bring him on for 30 at some point. So, you know, Curtis Jones is going to get his chance, and if he plays the performances that he's doing, and albeit his passing's been incredible, but we'd like to see more creativity, which he did have towards the end of the season, specifically Wolves. I don't even know what game it was at this point. But yeah, he was brilliant. Who was it on the off terms at Leicester?
When he scored two?
Yeah,
Leicester.
Yeah, they were sick.
The other thing as well is Jürgen's not, I don't think Jürgen's afraid to change things up when he sees something that he likes. So, as an example, I'm not saying this is what's going to happen, but we saw McAllister play alongside Casado in a two-man midfield at the start of the season for Brighton. Now, if Curtis Jones is in form, Fabinho's not in form, McAllister's in form, will Jürgen look to find a way to get them both in? Because McAllister play alongside Trent in the two of the at the base of the midfield, could Curtis Jones play alongside Szoboszlai maybe as the two attacking eights and stuff like that? And the other thing to sort of riff off Dan's point from earlier, obviously he's dealt with the injuries, but he came in as a left winger, he's moved to an eight, he's now moved to an advanced eight, which is different again. These are all things, and in each time he hasn't taken that long to get used to these positions. He understands Liverpool's system in and of itself. And you know, I remember speaking to Dave Maddock years ago about him, and it's like he's the guy that seems to get everything all the time. It doesn't matter where you put him, he understands what his pressing duties are, he understands where he needs to be in terms of joining the attack and stuff like that. So he's a very clever player. We all think it's, you know, when Liverpool moved to that 3-box-3, the uptick in form came, but that also came with Curtis Jones playing every single week. So it could be just more than the change of formation. It could be Curtis Jones's influence on this side as well.
He's one of the first sort of graduates of the change that Jürgen Klopp implemented top to bottom, you know, from the first team down through the academy levels. You know, he'd have been about 14 probably when Klopp comes to the club. You know, so he's then working his way up through the ranks and doing it and picking up things as they go along. He's almost like, again, the first generation. There'll be more to follow, and they should continue to supersede all the ones that have gone before them. But I know people, he's a divisive character, and I think what I'm glad though is the divisiveness comes down to now it's not he's good or he's shite. It's he's all right or he's good. You know, which is
progress for him, I guess. All I think Liverpool need him to be is a good player for them. You know, I talk about it all the time, but top quality sides should have a handful of academy graduates who, at the bare minimum, are really useful squad players. United's best teams were filled with them. Liverpool's teams in the 70s had a handful, 70s, 80s had handfuls of them either in the team or on the periphery. Barcelona, you know, that's how you're able to afford your stars, because you save money by having these guys. So Kurt, he's two years younger than McAllister. You know, 2 years ago, I think, you know, McAllister's playing 20 odd games in the Premier League, getting two or three goals. You know, I wouldn't say anyone was saying he was going to be a star of a World Cup winning team 2 years hence. And, you know, Kurt has got that development time to come, and early days on the 21 Euros is not the World Cup. But, you know, the old adage, you know, be what's in front of you. Mm. You're going to be at that level, be one of the best at that level, and that's what he's been.
It's also important that we have someone else like McAllister who's of the level, because with how many injuries he had, he does need some rest breaks, he does. And that is why being able to chop and change him and McAllister in there for whoever needs rest, whoever's fit enough, or what competition we're prioritising, it's really important that we've got two players who haven't got much difference in quality when on the pitch, when they're at their best.
Yeah, let's talk then about the return to training. Terrifyingly soon, anyone?
41 days, was it, since the game? It's not a lot of time, is it? You scared the shit out of me, to be honest. Yeah. I wasn't ready for it. Well, it was coming, and I wasn't ready for it at all.
Well, Daniel going to Karlsruhe next week.
No, I am indeed.
To watch us play our first pre-season game, and that is not right. That should be that quick.
But it's insane. Yeah. It is insane. Like, yeah, it does come around quick. It seems to never cease to amaze me how quickly it comes around, quite frankly. But yeah, like I say, some of the lads, I think the rest of the lads go back tomorrow, don't they? I think the rest of the team, well, not the rest, but the next load of the team go back tomorrow, yeah. The only 8 in training, obviously. I was really surprised to see Calvin Ramsey. That caught everyone off guard, I think anyone.
When did you go to Preston, like the 15th?
Yeah, so I think he's in the first week with us, and then before we go to Germany, he'll go and join Preston, yeah. But yeah, it does come around quick, but it's good to see, I think, isn't it? It gets a bit more back to normality, and kind of all the conversations that we're having around what things are going to look like, we get some more answers now in the coming days and weeks. And I love pre-season, to be honest with you. I like seeing these young lads given a chance, and you kind of can earmark onto the future and kind of have a word about where they could or could be in the years to come. So yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think the pre-season stuff, it's my favourite time of the year, because I don't like this period leading up to it when it's nothing but transfer. You then, I like that thing of like games don't really matter, so it's not stressful. Liverpool, it can be a bit crap, but it can be crap during the season and it matters. Mm. Because it doesn't matter as much as people try to make it matter, it doesn't. And they're getting those little hints, the little tastes of what someone might do. You'd always have two or three young players and you're like, yes, they're going to be the ones, and then you don't see anything of them. Like, I noticed, Yasser Larucci was in the French team in the under-21s the day, and I was like, oh my God, remember him? He was one of them, wasn't he? He was going to be the next great...
Was it Mbaye?
I was going to say Isaac Mbaye this time last year. Looked a real prospect. It's not really kicked off, but how about you, Chloe? Are you excited for him?
Yeah, these 41 days have been the most boring 41 days of my life. I absolutely hate the off-season. I needed it. I needed a break. But after about 3 weeks, I was like, I need the football back on. Now that Liverpool have done two pieces of business, I feel like we are a little bit further away from a third piece of business being done, and I can't be bothered with nothing going on aside from Twitter going up in flames. So it's a good distraction. It's great to see some football back. Enjoying seeing Darwin Nunes speak a bit of English and Joe Gomez absolutely just look at him as if to say piss off.
Someone mentioned this on the Twitch stream we did last night. They're like, Darwin speaking a bit of English. It's like, imagine Jürgen Klopp, he walks in and he goes, hey Darwin, how's it going? Good summer. And he goes, muy bien. He goes, oh, for fuck's sake, Darwin. Darwin, get out now.
Yeah, it was very cool to see. He was, he doesn't quite have the, he was speaking English, and I think he was like telling people, come on, boys, let's go. Yeah. He didn't quite have the get up and go in the voice, but it was there, and Jay Gomez did just look at him as if to say, just leave it to everyone else. Leave it to the coach and staff. But it's good to see.
Just try understanding what people are saying to you more than worrying about what you're saying, yeah.
But yeah, it's good to see. It's the exciting times where you get to see all the players come back from the holidays and really go for it. And it is literally now a countdown till the season starts, which is the most exciting time.
Yeah, I like this just because, again, it's that in-between time, isn't it, where you just get to just pleasantly, casually enjoy your football club. And there's loads of people who just don't watch pre-season stuff. And we're of the generation, Chris, where you started to be able to get them on telly, but you'd have to find pubs with dodgy satellite feeds. And we've watched some mad, like that one where Pepe Reina comes on in midfield Switzerland or whatever. Like, again, it was in a pub I was working at the time. We've watched stupid games, stupid kickoff times on tiny tellies in the corner of boozers just because it was like a new and exciting thing. It being LFC TV does add probably a little bit more pressure than it should because people seem to treat it seriously.
It's more that I enjoy the football side of it. I don't really, if I'm being totally frank with everybody, enjoy the talking around the games as much because it feels like I don't even know where to pitch it. And this is a personal thing. It's like, I don't want to just say it doesn't matter because stuff does matter. You know, the fitness side of things matters, but like, when you talk about it like we talk about it, just saying it doesn't matter doesn't really cut the mustard, does it? Mm. So it's like, if I'm at home watching it on my own,
and
here's
a dance for
the
next 59 minutes.
I just enjoy watching the football, but talking about the pre-season games, I actually find really difficult because you need the context of the season to put the pre-season into perspective, which you can't do because one precedes the other.
I've it mentally in my head a bit like a power rankings or whatever of where players kind of fit, and you know, like I have like a mental chart in my head of them. If they have a good game, it pushes them up a little bit, like a little graph or whatever. I don't know. I just find it fun.
Do you remember last year in pre-season when there was a singer that they'd put on and everyone came for the singer and not for the game of 14?
Yeah, it was Jackson Wang.
Iconic.
Was it the Rajamangala Stadium? I've got no idea. In Bangkok? Yeah, it was.
Was because there was empty seats, though, wasn't it? Did they put the seat?
Yeah. More people were asked about seeing Jackson. It was the most bizarre. It was the bizarrest game I've ever been to because there was loads of like goth kids running around. They were like a bit like Harry Styles goth fans, effectively. Like, so people were like mad, like sparkling. Like if Michael Jackson meets like Ramstein meets Harry Styles, you kind of had what Jackson Wang's fan base looked like. It was a
interesting,
wild, so
sort of like a mini Super Bowl,
and
early.
Still less stupid looking than people in Man United shirts.
Oh, yeah.
Low hanging fruit. I love the weirdness and the madness of it all. But we'll see. Karlsruhe on Wednesday. We'll be doing a watch along for that, and then is it this Monday
afternoon? It is. Yeah, the second one. Okay. Behind closed doors one.
Is there what I don't like about the pre-season is, and I totally get it, but you know where like one half we'll have just half of the players and I'm like, how am I supposed to know what Liverpool's front 11 is supposed to look like when it's chopped up into 4 25 minute teams? Like that does my head in at some point. I understand why.
It's the momentum killer when they bring them all on at the second half and you're like, this is basically a new game of football. Go ahead.
So if you were running pre-season, would you just have them doing 90 straight from the off?
No, but it does anger me. I'm like, well, there's Darwin, great, and there's Salah. And then it's like the front three for the next one is Jota, Diaz, Cody Gasp, and I'm like,
if they just did 2 45 minute games, would that be better for you?
Well, we've done that. We did that
last year.
Yeah,
we've done that before. But I know
is that better?
Like, there was 4 20 minutes for a while they were playing.
It was four twenty minutes, wasn't it?
For what? Yeah, in the Austria, two games in Austria were 4 20
and
minutes.
And they asked like Sepp Vandenberg or someone to go again and like play about 5 games.
It is a bit
something.
Like those, like the friendly tournaments where you see, or like charity tournaments and stuff, and it's the ones who are left on at the end, and you're just like, well, you're clearly on because they don't care about your fitness. Sepp Vandenberg plays 4 back-to-back 90s because we just need someone to
Calvin
do the
Ramsey
job.
This year.
I remember them doing it at Soccer Aid, I think it was Soccer Aid for Gerrard, and like, he had a little spell where he was playing with like Zidane or whatever in midfield, great, and then all of a sudden like all the good lads got off and he was still left on the pitch and he's like, I'm not like a celebrity here, can I have a career to think about here.
Is there anyone in pre-season who you've watched and they've been absolutely amazing, you think they've done brilliant but they've not done anything?
Danny Pacheco.
Every year he did it.
There was a history of there being that footballer. And it was Danny Pacheco was like the most celebrated example for our generation. It was followed by Suso.
Yeah.
And if anyone's got other examples, let us know in the comments on this one. What, have you got ones from your more recent
time? No, I can think ones that have worked. So when Salah first joined, the way he was getting in behind pretty much every single 3 minutes, I was like, oh my God, if Liverpool just do this, wow. And it did work like that. He was unbelievable. But I can't, I'm just thinking, like, imagine I get the Darwin Nunes that I did in his last season at Benfica from the off. Like, that is going to excite me to the maximum.
Like last pre-season.
No, because he didn't really do that. Against Crystal Palace or something, and they all came within, like...
And then there was the Community Shield.
Yeah. That did excite me, that one, yeah.
Absolutely. Right, OK, let's move on to transfer stuff. The Romeo Lavia rumours continue to rumble on with no actual movement, meaning... say it's been a slow news few days, Dan. Is a bit mild, to be honest. The story so far, I guess, is Liverpool apparently bid... In the low 30 millions for him. Southampton have reportedly set a 50 million price tag. Liverpool value him more like 40-ish. Mm-hmm. He's got a 20%, so Man City have got a 20% sell-on fee if they were to sell him this summer. I believe they've got a buyback clause that activates next summer, which complicates everything. He's 19. He's played 35 or something senior games for Southampton. Where are you with this?
I want to sign him because I like him as a footballer. He's clearly the one we've identified now. After looking at like Zakef and Tavan, we've clearly decided that Lavia is the next one. I think he fits what we're looking to do. I think he actually fits the six role in the way it's going to be utilised moving forwards better than probably Fabinho in many senses, actually. I really like Fabinho, but I think as a standalone six, Fabinho is the better option. But if you're going to have Trent alongside him, I think having someone like Lavia, who plays it so differently, is actually perfect for the job. That's not to say Lavia will come in and replace Fabinho, because I think being so young helps him in that sense. He doesn't need to come in and play all the time. He'll drop into games, he'll play Europa League stuff, domestic cups, give Fabinho a rest, which is also vitally important, because coming back to Curtis Jones and McAllister before, having someone to give our main lads a rest, we just haven't had in recent years. So Fabinho desperately needs that as well, I think it's quite clear to see. So I would like us to get the deal done. I wouldn't like us to get the deal done for 50 million. That feels way, way over the price tag for me. The 40 million clause is something that the City have for next year. I don't even know if City would trigger it. They're not getting involved this summer because they have Calvin Phillips and Rodri, so they don't really have any need to go and sign another DM. But yeah, like I say, I do hope we can find a middle ground with Southampton on this. But for me, I think Southampton, the problem they've got is they want best price for him anyway, because he's probably their prized asset. But also, the fact that they are going to lose 20% of it straight away kind of ties their hands even further, because they know that if we offer 40, they're not getting 40. Yeah. So we might have to add the 20% on for Southampton's sake. It was a difficult deal to do, but I think the player wants to come to us. Jurgen Klopp clearly wants a player. So I still hope that we can get the deal across the line.
What about you, Chloe? 50 million?
Absolutely not. A lad who's 19 who's played 17 more senior games than Stefan Bajetic is not worth 50 million. I like him, decent player. We can make him homegrown, can't we? He's actually from Belgium. Yeah. So, you know, that is a massive pull factor for Liverpool. I think that is potentially also why we changed sites. I was so set on Kefren Turam. Love the lad. Would still adore him if we could make shift him into a six. But that's me just with like a career mode head on instead of what Liverpool really need. They do need the more kind of six-year-old lad, Dan said, which is why Lavia perfectly fits that. I would not be going higher than 32 mil to be like 35.
To be specific,
37.75 million for Chloe.
35 is too much for me. That I'm in between 30 and 35. He's too young to be and had two less appearances to be 50 mil. Kefren Turam would have been 50 mil.
He's playing in the fucking Championship next season. You know what I mean? That's another consideration point for this. And go on, Chris.
I'm in the same boat as Chloe, to be honest. I really like him on the eyeball test. I don't like him in the numbers at all. In fact, I don't actually agree that he's the right type of DM either. I don't see him as a ball hawk at the moment. You can play the six on his own. I think Dan's right when he says Fabinho is better suited to a six. So in defensive situations, I'd be going against really good sides. I'd actually be more concerned about having Lavia in than Fabinho. In attacking situations, right now, I see that he spots a pass. I can see that. You know, he's very... proactive in terms of moving the ball and progressing the ball down the field and stuff. So I really like that. But Fabinho can do that as well. We've seen him do that consistently over the years. So I actually think he's probably the wrong type of defensive midfielder, but I'm basing it on what I see today. And Liverpool aren't. Liverpool are basing it on what he could be in a year or 2 years' time. Yeah. And that's the big difference for me right now. And so, therefore, I think 50 million's ridiculous. Absolutely fucking ridiculous. I think 40 million's pretty much ridiculous as well. I'm probably not going to be so specific as Chloe, but like 34.75 million or something like that. No, like, I actually think 30 million's quite high as well, to be honest with you. I think this is being batted over to the players' court.
Yeah.
And I think that's how Liverpool are playing this now, is because of what you've just said. He is going to be playing in the Championship, and Romeo Lavia is going to have to turn around to Southampton at some point and say, I don't want to play in the Championship, lads. You're going to have to accept the offer that's on the table from Liverpool Football Club. That could therefore mean that this drags on a little bit longer than we probably expect it to. But if Liverpool get him for 30, 35 max maybe, I think that's... I can see the sense in what Liverpool are trying to do. As I'm framing it on what I've seen today and what the past is. They're not framing it on that. They're seeing the future, and I can't see that in the same way that they do.
I just want to know what this does to Stefan Bajetic, because I really, really love Stefan Bajetic. I think he's been brilliant. We all liken him to the fact that if Trent got injured, God forbid, maybe Bajetic does that role, which therefore I guess you do need another player as backup to go along, to keep switching out either him or Fab. But where the hell does this leave Stefan? Because like, we've just signed McAllister, we've signed Szoboszlai on the other side, you're signing Lavia to play the position where Bajetic played last season before he got injured. I don't know where, I just don't want it limiting anyone else's progress, which I feel like it might
I don't mind limiting people's progress if they're better.
Yeah,
to be honest, and that's what it will come
down
to.
Inferior players have their time limited. I mean, the only counterpoint to that is when you've got a promising young player and you go out and buy like a 27-year-old global superstar for that position instead of trusting your development. But no, I agree with you on that.
I think the other thing is as well with Bajetic, I've heard rumours that he's not going to be fit at the start of the season. I don't know how true these rumours are. We're talking maybe a month or 2 months. I think this age, that sort of 18 to 21 in terms of physical development, sometimes going up to Kurt Jones's age, like closer to 23, you can come across quite a lot of stumbling blocks as a young player. We saw it happen to Steven Gerrard, Michael Owen at that time as well. I think there might be a little bit of edging your bets on this in terms of the Lavia and Bajetic, and just wondering, is he going to be okay through these years? They've seen the injury that he's got, we haven't. They might look at that and go, he actually might recover fully, you never know.
The name came up in the comments actually, and it reminded me of someone put Damien Plessis as one of the names. Graham Stables says Plessis, Jao Teixeira, Craig Linfield as young lads who starred in pre-season. But Plessis, I think I used him as an example during last season. It's like, where's our Damien Plessis? I mean, this guy isn't, Romeo Lavia isn't that. What I mean is, Liverpool was short. There was a spell where we were desperately short for central midfielders. Mm-hmm. And Damien Plessis is in the under 21s, and he's 6'4" and he's a DM. And he was never really good enough to play at that level.
Well, he was tons of fun.
But he was fine. He fit the profile for what we needed to come in and step in. We don't seem to have that in the unders at the moment. We've got Bobby Clark who wants more game time, but he's not Fabinho too. I'm not even sure Bajetic really is. You know, I'm not 100% certain what his position is. He was a centre half. We tried him at 6 and he looked really good. We then tried him at 8 and he looked even better. I agree. I think that Liverpool have to box smart a bit on this. Is that 30 to 40 to 50 million is ludicrous for effectively a Fabinho's understudy, because that's where he's at in his development, I think, right now. But
they're playing the long game here, aren't
they? Exactly. Just on the Bajetic stuff, the point you made there, I actually think we might see his longer term future as an 8 person. I really do, because I think he was very impressive in that role. I don't think Lavia hasn't got the physicality of Fabinho either, but he's probably slightly upper level in terms of physicality from Bajetic. And you do want a little bit of that, of course you do. So I wonder if we do see him as potentially sort of a longer term 8 And I wonder whether his fitness is definitely a thing, because Neil Jones said he won't be quite ready for the start of the season. He obviously got involved in pre-season the other day, so you do wonder where he's at in terms that maybe there are some concerns there. And also, the biggest factor in all this is Thiago's future. Like, we're all sort of stressed about adding one, but Thiago, I don't think he's going to be ready for the start of the season, because he didn't train at all the other day. He didn't get involved in the slightest. I think his injury continues to go, and will even be at the club at the start of the season. So if we lose one all of a sudden, there's another hole there where you can add a Lavia.
We need to, there's some big questions on those, because what you can't afford to do is spend quite a lot of money on rebuilding the midfield and have it fall short because you're still carrying injured football players into the season, then trusting that they're going to be fine as the season progresses. Don't repeat that mistake again. I'm fine with holding lads who can't play four games in a week or two weeks period. You know, it's something that you have to be careful with. You can carry a couple of them in your squad, but don't presume someone who hasn't had a pre-season is going to have a stellar season that follows that, because that is the absolute killer. That always does us in. But you can do it if you ever got Oxlade Chamberlain a good pre-season, you could have a good season. Naby would have a better season if he played in pre-season and so on. So again, go back to hedging the bets on this. Is imagine spending £100 million on Szoboszlai and McAllister, but then Fabinho gets crocked and Stefan Bocetic is his only understudy and he's not played all summer, and then he's on a hard and to dot. And so there's definitely a bit in that. I think there's a general consideration in the comments here. I think people have kind of agreed that the money's a bit too much. I just think we're so desperate for which is the sweet sucker of signings, aren't we, that it's tempting to go, fucking gives a shit, go and spend it. I want to do priorities off the back of this. We'll do this in part two. But has anyone got any final thoughts or anything on Lavia before?
Is he only 5'9"?
5'11, I think.
He's bigger than this. Oh, yeah, isn't he? He's just under six. And he's probably not finished growing yet, to be honest with you, at 19. Okay.
I think he's 5'10 at most.
Can I carry out something?
Transfer Market is very misleading on this, by the way.
FB Ref's got it, and they're normally pretty accurately. I'm sure it was 5'11 on there.
Have we not saved an amount of money on Lexis McAllister? Like, we probably have. Nobody thought we'd get him for £35 million. Mm. Nobody.
But then Liverpool didn't probably expect to pay a release clause in one hit either.
That is true, yeah. But if you read certain reports, we haven't actually done that. So there's different conversations around that as well. So maybe there's something
in. Is this the big advertisements in town?
Maybe we are going to... Maybe we might overpay for Lavia, is what I'm going to say. Maybe we might pay £10 million more than we'd really like to for Romelu. But just to get it done, we just go and do it. Because Chelsea, Arsenal, Man City all want this footballer.
Yeah.
Like, there's a reason behind that. And I think maybe we just might be willing to say, do you know what? Yeah, it's £10 million more than the ideal world, but we've saved £25 million on McAllister.
Do we still want a centre-back as well, though? Like, we're...
Surely we do.
We should.
Once again, we don't know how much is left in the pot, but... This is where you've got to look at Thiago and maybe Matip to bring some money in, because I think I think we need a centre back before we get the third midfielder.
Well, let's pick that up in part two, which is literally called transfer priorities.
Thank you. That was a little sneaky.
Great segue, Chloe.
just last on the Lavia stuff is it's interesting because it's that Liverpool now know how much it's going to cost. And the question is, if you know, and if you've got the money, you can push that whenever you want. But we might find this is similar to what we had a couple of weeks ago with someone like Gabby Vega and obviously Kevin Tehram as well. Is there a dire pressing need to get this done today or tomorrow? Or can they afford to just see what develops with that? Maybe that might be.
I think you're right there. I think they probably can, because I see it like you do, where I don't see that he's the day one starter and therefore it doesn't matter as much as getting a McAllister or Szoboszlai through the door, who I see as day one starters.
Absolutely. Right, very short break from us. When we return, we're going to be discussing the priorities, which other positions do we think that Liverpool really need to go hard for this summer in a bit.
Hey everyone, brand new month, brand new incredible Liverpool competition prize over on redmenplus.com. It is what we have affectionately dubbed the Legends shirt. Every former Liverpool player that we interviewed over the course of the season, we got them to sign this wonderful Liverpool home shirt. That includes, and let me get the list for you, you've got Rush, Aurelio, Skirtle, Aldridge, Steve McMahon, Mark Wright, Jace Bearding, and Adam Lallana. All you need to do is go to redmenplus.com, join as a club legend, or upgrade an existing subscription from club captain to club legend, and you will be in the prize draw at the end of the month for our incredible Liverpool legend shirt. redmenplus.com.
Cheers.
Yeah, become a legend tier subscriber on redmenplus.com. Get yourself our awesome legend shirt signed by all those random four Liverpool players. The only one of them in the world. And you can say that when that's hung on your wall, when you win that at the end of the month. Right, priorities. I'm going to start with kind of rewind the clock up. The best part of a week, but James Pearce wrote an article which set Liverpool Twitter once again aflame, saying they didn't think there'd be any more signings, they'd be triggered by sales more than anything else. So first off, Chris Pajak, where do you stand on that as a concept?
It kind of makes sense, I think.
Apologist.
Because I don't think that it's the truth, and I think that Liverpool want people to think it's the truth, the same way that 24 hours before we signed Szoboszlai, we were working in an incredibly tight budget, and then we spent nearly 70 million on the lad the next day. I think Liverpool have always been canny in the market. I think it is important that we do recoup money at some point during the off-season, before the season starts, if we want to fill in all the voids. I don't think we can do all the work that we need to do in this without doing it, but I do think one more signing without recouping anything is absolutely fine.
Chloe?
Yeah, very much similar to Chris. I think you can afford to get one player in, and then you need to start potentially getting other people off your wage bill, like Thiago will probably be sat on quite a hefty amount of money, and you've also got to be thinking about those people whose contracts end next summer, and you'll get absolutely nothing for them then. Let's not continue making the same mistake. Let's be a bit more ruthless, because at the end of the day, if that's being reinvested in the club, then it's the best action to take.
Yeah, Tom? Yeah, I had a slightly different read on it, which is very typical of me. I had it more down as a numbers game, not in terms of monetary, in terms of squad size. Mm. The way James Pearce wrote the article suggested to me that there was just too many midfielders at the football club. We included Tyler Morton in it, which who knows how that'll be, how the land lies when his future gets decided in the coming weeks. But for me, it was more of a numbers thing. You just can't add Romy Olavia to the nine senior midfield options already had. Doesn't make any sense. So I do think there is money at play here as well. You do want to recoup some money. The Thiago thing is clearly, he's the elephant in the room in all of this, because he's 200 grand wages, he's injury prone, he's not fit now, so on and so forth, he's not the future, etc, etc. I do think there is a market whereby he moves on, and that would make a lot of sense. Even like the biggest Thiago fans that we own, probably me, are thinking, do you know what, we could probably sell him, you know what I mean? Yeah. So I definitely think there's a world whereby that happens. But it's also, in terms of money, I think it's more the fringe players that you've got to be looking at and be a bit savvy with. Like Chloe mentions, not moving on players in the final 12 months of the deal. We've been diabolical at that, quite frankly. Yeah. But it's your Nat Phillips of this world. Like, Nat Phillips has to leave for his own sake at this time around. But if you get 10, 12 million for him, put that into your pocket as well, and that into your coffers, that frees up something else you can go and do. So we do need to be savvy. Money is definitely a thing, but I read the midfield situation as more, where do you fit him? Like, where do you fit him in the squad? So I wonder whether we need to lose a midfielder, probably Thiago, before we can add one.
I agree with that. That was my general reading of it. And again, it comes back to, it's a whole business, it's a whole windows business we're trying to do here. And I think it's squad, because it's all well and good saying, get your players in, then sell the players you want. Two things. A, that's not how we like to do business, because we like to maximise what we're getting in the sales. And when you've got a bunch of players who are outside of your registered squad, effectively, well, you've just halved their value, or you lead to a fire sale, which I think they'll be keen to avoid. But there is also that world where, what if Thiago just goes, you know what, I'm fine, I'll just stay for a year. I'll see my contract out, and then I'll go and move on at the end of it. Players don't have to move if they don't want to move. Ultimately, you can make it uncomfortable. I'm not sure how uncomfortable we would make it for certain players. I don't think Klopp has lots of that in him. Maybe some frank conversations, just be listening to yourself a favour and sling your hook, and you know, we'll all crack on. But that squad harmony thing, I think, is a big part of this. We have those footballers, and I think that's true. We've got a full squad of players, I think, at this point, more or less. I think there's one, you know, even go back to that point of the non-homegrown thing we looked at last week.
Yeah.
There's maybe one more space in the squad. We do need to move some lads on. I think you're only looking at maybe, if you sold all the fringe players, what are you getting in cumulatively 40 million maybe.
Probably about that, yeah.
Yeah, you know, which is no small chunk of change, but it's not, I don't think Liverpool's business is going to hinge on selling five players at a total of £40 million to make the rest of everything kind of tick. But I do think they're going to box clever with what comes next. We had a just to quickly jump back with a super chat from Michael Ramsey. 10 years ago, you bought rubbish Hendo, 20 million, 16 mil, which is the equivalent of 40 million now. So Lavia is way better than all your young players. Solid. And Scott Hawk says, if only for understanding how we utilise the remaining homegrown slot, we'll be cagey with the next signing, which I expect to be a defender, but need to see how the market develops.
Did that lad give us money to comment that?
Yeah.
Oh, that was such a shit comment. So much money.
Thank you so much. Just going through it, Chris, just to list some positions. Right wing forward, DM, Trent cover slash right back, right centre back, left back. Our squad would be improved by buying a player in any of those positions.
But one more so than all the others.
Which you think is...
Left side of centre half.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the you can improve your first team position. The others you improve your squad.
I think the left side of centre half thing is massive, and this goes back to squad management. Because at the minute we've got two lads for that position, but I don't think either of those lads are ideal candidates for that position. But to the idea of moving Andy Robertson and Kostas Tsimikas on in a summer and then effectively having to buy two of the lads, I don't think that's what they'll do. But this goes back to this, to your point maybe, Dan, of it's all well and good. I think it might hinge on Kostas because they'll go and buy a left side of centre half, but you've got a £15 million-ish, maybe you get more for Kostas now, I don't know. We paid about that for him, yeah, didn't we? What is there any, like, any massaging around that they can do to kind of shift him out and that he might be the linchpin?
He very much is. And to the point about the money, I think you do get more for him than that, to be honest with you, because we signed him for 12 and a half when he had no elite football experience, essentially like Greek league, Olympiakos, fine. But he's played in the Premier League, he's played Champions League since then, he's become more of an established international since then. So I do think Liverpool, especially, like, for all our flaws in business, and we have had some flaws in business in the past sort of 18 months, we do still tend to get good money for players when we sell them. Vian Brewster, for instance, Dom Solanke, etc. So I do think we'll be pushing the 20 million mark for Tsimikas, but he absolutely is the key to that left-sided situation in terms of what we can do. Because if we do sign one, which I agree with Chris and Chloe on, I think that should be the priority, because Robertson doing a job there is very much Robertson doing a job there. It doesn't suit him at all. So if we do sign an elite one and one who's tailor-made for the role, perfect. But then you do look at Tsimikas and say, well, Andy Robertson's the backup to this new lad we've just signed. What are you? Like, with all due respect, what does that make you? You're of 27, 26. You should be playing football somewhere, you know what I mean? And you're not going to be, so where do we go from here?
Do you think that the Robertson situation actually makes buying the left side of centre-half easier than any other of the defensive positions, Chloe? Because, as you, with the formation shifted, it's not like... You go and buy Virgil van Dijk's understudy. I mean, I know he's, there's a case that might be saying he's starting to fade, or the beginning of it, certainly. Tell any centre-half in the world, all right, I'm going to fight with Virgil van Dijk for a place. All right, sounds good one. Yeah, I'll go and join someone else. Thanks. Canate, still young. It'd be a difficult sell, I think, to buy someone there. Even if you're getting a young player for this, though, now you're saying you'll definitely get games. But Andy Robertson's probably not going to want to stick around beyond this season anyway, I'd guess, if that role's not right for him. So someone like a Levi Colwill is an example of this. He's saying, yeah, mate, you're not going to come in and play 50 games for us this season. You've got to get ahead of Andy Robertson, but you probably will because you're more suited to this formation, and then it's your place to lose from next year onwards.
Yeah, potentially. I don't know. It seems quite sad having a team without Robertson because you think of the graft that he puts in, the way he plays for the badge, he leaves absolutely everything out on the pitch, and I totally understand, you know, he's not tailor-made for the position that we are doing. He's much defensively more solid than Kostas, which is why it makes sense as a backup. But having Andy Robertson, who, by the way, you know, was once a couple of years ago, the best left back in the world. He's still very much up there. To not have him in the system is actually ludicrous to think about how good of a player he is. But yeah, I guess if he is an asset where if Liverpool in a year's time he comes to them and says, look, this doesn't fit me, I want to leave, you can get a decent amount of money for it, I would not like it because I'm very sentimental. But it does make it easier because that those players like the Levi Cole, which, you know, I'd love to see him in red, if he comes in, he knows he's the future and he knows he's got a ladder to step up into. So yeah, there's potential for that.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
I think Robertson and Fabinho, Chris, just for talking, they're the opportunity for Liverpool to reset and go again in terms of fixing the mistakes that they've got wrong over the last few years or holding on to lads a little bit too long. You know, they're both 29, I think. You'll be 30, not 30 this season. It's a good time in the next 12 months to look at moving those on. You know, if you're going to get the maximum value, you've gotten the best, definitely gotten their best years out of them. They might well have some more good years ahead of them, but their value is never going to be higher than it's going to be in the next 12 months, and that's how you get back to being what Liverpool were in terms of being able to refresh the squad.
I think so, yeah, I think you're right. I'm very much aligned with Chloe on this one, to be honest. That there's a part of me that's absolutely gutted that we're even talking about it, you know, the respect that I have for Andy Robertson in particular, and Fabinho, to be fair. Like, but ultimately, there's no point hanging on to a left-back if you don't play a left-back, no matter how good they were.
Yeah.
Like, we could have fucking prime Roberto Carlos. Doesn't matter. Wouldn't play in the system. Yeah. Doesn't suit the system. He's too small.
Yeah.
Thighs are too big. We need him to be taller. And ultimately, there is a massive knock-on effect, I believe, for Ibu Konate. And I think that's why Ibu Konate got exposed so much at the back end of last season, because Robertson does like to go forwards and you're leaving two people to cover three people's job, essentially, in the system that we've got. Me and Josh did a deep dive on this about Levi Colwill and sort of Andy Robertson last Friday on Red Men Plus, specifically looking at one of those issues and stuff. So it'd be gutting to see Robertson go, but like, it's cutthroat, isn't it? You know what I mean? You've got to improve, and that's the easiest place to improve on, as I see it.
I think there's lads there, Dan, who are intelligent enough footballers, they're committed enough sports people, athletes, that they'll be able to do a job for us in the short term on stuff. And like, Jordan Henderson's that. I think Thiago's that. James Milner was clearly that before that. I think Robertson's that too.
Yeah.
And that's fine for a short term, while we're rebuilding to something more. I don't think we can do it all in one hit. So again, I don't think the Robertson issue is an issue this summer. You know, I'm saying, Andy, don't worry about you, mate. I wouldn't be looking to shift him on any time soon, because again, I think it's too much business.
Mm-hmm.
But the Kostas Tsimikas stuff is one where you do have to look at it and go, I mean, look, it's one's 27, one's 29, 30. Tsimikas should be the guy to keep, but I don't know that. I'd hedge my bets more on Robertson holding his own for another season.
Yeah.
I mean, you can see, we're going to talk about it on the Bias Football podcast, but Arsenal are happy to let Tierney go by the looks of it, and he's a cracking left back. But again, that's not what they need in the system. You do have to be ruthless, and we've been accused of not being ruthless enough.
Mm.
These are good examples of where we might need to turn that around.
Oh, 100%, yeah. I don't think we have been ruthless enough, quite frankly, in the market with some of these players. I think Jurgen Klopp, you know, he's got hundreds of, if not thousands, of positive elements to his management, but one of the very, very few negatives is he is too loyal to some of these players. I don't think we can really beat around the bush on that. And I think part of this change in the way we go about things should be a more ruthless nature, and we should be able to cut ties with footballers when the time is right. And I agree with you, Paul, that the time isn't right to cut ties with Andy Robertson now, because he's ahead of Kostas Tsimikas as a footballer. So if you are looking at one of them two going, which one do we keep around as our backup, it's Robertson all day long. And you're right, he's an intelligent enough man, he's captain of his national team, so he's got leadership qualities as well that he brings to the party. And this was one of the things when the Henderson stuff came out, is like, you've already lost your vice captain James Milner, you've lost some other senior figures, liked them or loathed them. You don't want to throw the baby out of the bathwater. You're doing this huge rebuild. You want to keep some familiar faces around who know the system, who know what's going on. They can help integrate the new lads, etc., etc. And Andy Robertson will 100% be one of them for this upcoming season. Whether we sign one, I hope we do, or not. But yeah, I think further down the line, there's definitely scope. And people were talking again about Fabinho maybe being ruthless for him because he had a pretty nightmarish season by his standards last year. Let's again be quite frank about it. But I think you'd be... That'd be going ruthless to the extreme. That'd be overboard if you sort of went, right, bad season, gone. Fabinho, whatever. Robertson, don't suit the system, gone. That's too far. But I do think when we're sat here next summer, we should be saying, right, now's the time to sell these lads because we're not going to get anything like the money ever again.
Yeah. I played devil's advocate here for one second, and bear in mind I'm in the same place as you. Now's not the summer. What's the figure that makes you go, okay?
For Robertson. 80, 70 to 80 mil.
70 for Robertson? No, it's less than that.
What did...
No. That's to get him out now. They'd have to give me 70 or 80
no,
minimum.
No, it's still less than that for me. I'm sorry.
50.
Really?
Yeah, I think if somebody came to say with 50 million... And I love Andy Robertson, of course. It goes without saying, don't even know why I said it. But it's still 50 million. And it's similar for Fabinho, to be honest.
Yeah,
just thought it was an interesting one. I in my head when I asked it, I was thinking 50 to 60. So yeah,
really? You're not pushing either of them out the door, by the way. This is the difference.
If Real Madrid come in with a £50 million bid, then thank you.
Of course, you'd be stupid not to.
If that allows you to go, and again, it's all knock on impact. So great,
it's not going to happen.
No, it's happened, but it's like this thing. It's great having 50 million burning a hole in your arse pocket. It's like selling your house before you've bought your next house. Mm. You know, we've had conversations around people doing this, Chris, and it's hilarious. When people go, oh, great, I'll sell my house. And then you go and look at the market and go, oh,
More expensive than when I bought my house.
What can I buy with this? Oh, not worse. Okay, crap. I'm undervalued.
Why did you move out of a 4-bedroom house into a 2-bedroom bunker? That was all that was available. Why did you sell your house? I'd agreed.
Yeah, it seemed like a good idea at the time. Yeah, so, you know, if they're determined that someone like, and this is just pure hypothetics, just to reiterate everything we're saying here, if that's Levi Colwill and you've decided that he is the one, he's the next ... then, and that facilitates that sound. I still don't think it solves the problem of, I don't think Tsimikas can play left centre half. So even if you got rid of Robertson, you still probably have to get rid of Tsimikas as well. So you're still doing two, whereas I think Robertson is your digging, and you let him fight for it because, moreover, it, as we talked about, it's the characters. It keep the lad who are prepared to fight and die and do whatever's necessary for you, for the club, for the shirt, for the fans, all that kind of stuff. I'm not saying Kostas wouldn't do that. I know what I'm getting from Andy Robertson. That's 110% any position you put him on the pitch. Yeah.
Maybe that's why I went up in estimate. I would not sell him for 50 mil. I wouldn't. I think that's because Levi Colwell's 50 mil apparently.
Yeah.
So that's literally just getting me one person, and then I've got to deal with Kostas. God forbid if Levi Colwill got injured. He's only a young lad. Who knows how his body would keep up game in, game out. He played 13 games across, I think, the Premier League last season for Brighton. He had a little injury spell, but aside from that, he was on the bench. He wasn't used every single game. 13 games is, you know, it's under half of the Premier League games that there is there. So for me, a 50 mil is far too little because I need the replacement, and then I need a backup still because Kostas. And maybe if you sold Kostas, then yeah. But I feel like that's a lot of work to be done. And also, I think the teams who were linked with Robertson, which it was absolute bullcrap, but it was the likes of Real Madrid. I know you have money. If you think I'm giving you him for 50 mil, if that's what your first bid is, absolutely not.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm still taking 50. It was a really compelling argument, but I'm still taking 50. Sorry.
Comment here from Jason Knight, who says, issue is, what if back four comes back into fashion and we have no proper left backs? Now, this is very much a person who hasn't lived that life where you go, I'm going to keep my skinny clothes in the wardrobe ready for when I eventually lose weight down the line. Word of advice, bin all the clothes that you don't fit in anymore. And if you manage to get better, treat yourself down the line with buying yourself some clothes that actually fit. Yeah. Waiting for things to come back in again. Give you a great example.
I've got to throw those shell suits out, actually, yeah, thinking about it.
So, yeah, best example is that 1990 that Adidas tracky top. And I adored that and I kept that for years. It was my dad's one. I kept it, wore it. And I was like, this will come back around at some point. And it did. When we had Adidas last time, they made a brand new version of it. And I just looked like I had this manky, crappy, dirty old one compared to all these pristine new ones that everyone had. You can't live your life worrying about what's going to happen in the future. We've got to be all in. I think we've been quite, and that's why I don't think we'll get rid of both of them this summer, by the way, is maybe a little bit of what Jason's saying. I think we're hedging our bets a touch with our business so far, because they're lads who fit in with moving the formation more readily to the box midfield. But I could easily see us going back to 4-3-3 or doing a mix of last week.
Being unpredictable, though. What's wrong with that? Like, if we're not sure what formation we're going to be playing, then the opposition's got no chance, have they?
That happened last year, but with the players on the pitch, and it didn't help us. Yeah.
But look at what City are doing. City are getting rid of all their fullbacks. You know, Cancelo, obviously, he'll come back, but they're trying to get a pair of
weeks. Bear in mind.
The likes of this, he'll play fullbacks, though. He'll go to a back four and just have Riyad Mahrez doing right back or something mad, knowing him.
That Sergio Gomez that they bought came out after the game in that final and absolutely shat all over Cole Palmer. Yep. So it'd be interesting to see which one of them leaves this summer after that's happened, because Sergio Gomez absolutely dragged Cole Palmer through the mud. And I wonder who's going to get shipped out because of that, because Cole Palmer is the up and coming next generation of City. This Sergio Gomez lad, you can be replaced in a heartbeat.
He got the assist for Curtis Jones and Nicole Palmer.
I know.
Lovely ball.
Yeah, it was great, wasn't it? He really fizzed it in.
Yeah. Curtis Jones, I mean, you know when they say the pass
into the corridor of arse.
Instructions on it. That was one of them.
Brilliant. Jay is saying Chilwell went for 50 million. And also says Robbo 70 million minimum. Yeah, fine.
Love you. Thank you.
Chilwell's like 23 at the time.
Probably.
Yeah.
He's going to sell. You know, he's an established world class footballer. Those players move for stupid money all the time, don't they?
I'd have a buy-in, or right, I would want.
And the Robertson would cook in Saudi Arabia.
No way he'd play in Saudi Arabia.
He'd be in big trouble. he's just not strong enough.
Yeah, he's just not made for that climate, is he?
I want to ask a couple of people talking about the Jordan Henderson Saudi stuff in here, so we might as well. But before we do, Jaden Granville just sent a super chat in, one for Dan. Which current LFC player would make the best fast bowler?
Oh, good question. I'll tell you what, Virgil van Dijk might be the one. He's a big lad. Yeah, gets it down. Really? I reckon Virgil, yeah, be a handful.
I think he's too lax, whatever the hell I say is. Lackadaisical. Yeah, I think
Mohamed Salah would bowl lovely little slow left arm spin. If we were having a cricket chat, he'd be a lovely little slow left arm spinner, yeah. It'd be really nice.
I feel like Virgil's just too calm.
Darwin Núñez would be wild.
Oh,
Darwin Núñez, he'd be hard work. Mark Wood-esque, Darwin Núñez.
Like more baseball players in the film Major League, they've got a character called Rick Vaughan, who's played by Charlie Sheen, who's got this unbelievable fastball, but it turns out he's got bad eyesight, so he nearly like kills people with this. I reckon Darwin would be a bit like that. Yeah. If he gets it in line,
you're in trouble.
It's cleaning you out on the stump shelter. Whatever, but more often than not,
he's bouncing high.
Yeah, there's a fella from Australia called Sean Tate years ago, bowled like 100 mile an hour rockets, and he called him the Wild Thing because he had no idea what was going on.
That's definitely right from Major League, because that's the theme music for that, guys.
What about Alisson? He can actually throw a ball.
No, No, Alisson, no, I don't think. More of a batsman, Alisson, yeah.
Well, who's the spinner?
It's Mo Salah.
Oh, yeah.
Mo Salah would be guile. Mo Salah would be hard work. Yeah. Crafty, just smiling at you as you miss him all the time.
Yeah. Set you up as well a few times.
Yeah, and then just give you a send-off and you went. Yeah.
There we go. Hendo, Saudi.
I don't think he'd be very good at cricket.
Steven Gerrard, we were going to talk about the Steven Gerrard stuff more on the Bias Transfer Pod after this. Outrageous, just the whole thing. We had a good laugh about this last week. I'm in on like Gerrard watch. Yeah, fascinating. Do we think Jordan would follow Gerrard over there?
No. I don't think Jordan would be training that hard if he's going to Saudi Arabia.
Okay.
That's true.
No, it's a good point.
It's fucking true.
Good point.
Yeah.
He's training for a big season with us, not in...
He might be the
Attacking.
Most ripped person that's ever lived.
Yeah, he shredded.
He's putting, put him next to Salah. They're having like the six-pack challenge.
Yeah.
Fair play to him.
No, I don't see it myself. I do, from any perspective, really. I mean, obviously, there is a perspective whereby Gerrard would take him 100%, but Henderson, no, not now. He's going to want to be a part of this rebuild and going to want to be front and centre of it, quite frankly. Yeah. And why would we? It's stupid. It's daft.
We've already got rid of James Milner. This is why last week when I was talking about it, I said I'd sell Thiago before I'd sell Jordan Henderson. Jordan Henderson's English, obviously, but aside from that, he is your captain. We've already lost James Milner, who was sort of that role. He was the vice one. He was the one who... kind of, you know, was there at the unders training and the academies. Jordan Henderson's now going to become that James Milner role, and to get rid of him would make less sense than to get rid of Thiago, who's only got a year, and even though he is heavily experienced, he's not your captain.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one. I just think it is interesting that we're quite content with the idea of moving Thiago on, but less content with the idea of Jordan Henderson.
Thiago's a better footballer than Jordan Henderson today.
1,000,000%.
But Jordan Henderson, as Chloe says, is the leader, and you need someone who's going to set the level at Liverpool Football Club, because it was him and James Milner that set the level.
You can't lose both of that.
How many years has he got left on his contract as well?
He signed a new deal, didn't he, last year?
So, like, sell him in a year's time. 2025? 2 years' time.
Yeah, the baton needs to be handed over to somebody else, and it ain't right now, because it might be Trent Alexander-Arnold. Am I right in saying Virgil's going to be the vice-captain heading into this season now? Still don't see him as setting the level every single week.
Yeah, I agree.
Different type of captain for me, more your Gerrard than your Carragher type of a captain. Could it be Trent? Could it be Robertson even? Maybe not now with what we're talking about earlier on in the show and stuff. So somebody's going to have to come in and prove that they are the next captain of Liverpool Football Club, because I don't see that we've got them right now.
Mm. At what price would you sell Hendo?
I wouldn't, actually.
You wouldn't for any price?
100.
Realistically.
There is a price here.
There is a price, and it's probably 40 to 50 million, maybe something like that, but no one's coming in for 50 million for a 32-year-old.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? It goes back to this thing, again, the unknowns about what we're doing. Until I see more business, I can understand quite easily how you could unplug what Robertson or Tsimikas and put a left-footed centre-half in, and it would probably give us a bit more stability. It would fit more naturally what we're doing. I don't know that Henderson's natural anymore for almost any of the midfield roles.
But he covers three or four.
But he does. And again, it's a there's a lot of people talking about this. You know, I'm seeing it mentioned about buying players and squad depth. That's what you want. That's where we've done really well over the years, and we've misstepped in the last couple. Is your first team has become your squad players, and James Milner was the ultimate archetype, and why I'd have kept him for just another year, because you don't want him starting games of footy for you. But you want to have that option around at any given opportunity if you need it. And I think Henderson can perform that if he wants to perform that. I think he is a fantastic squad player. I don't think he'll want to be that. I think he's going to give his all to make sure that's not the case. Exactly. And that is
and that makes him a brilliant squad player.
Yeah.
It makes him the leader. It makes him the captain and everything else. James Milner was on your depth chart in about seven different positions. Jordan Henderson, maybe three or four. The two lads that we've spoken about most today in terms of going out, Thiago is more of a specialist. And I don't actually see where his position is in this side now. If I'm honest, and Andy Robertson, who's more of a specialist, and then Kostas Tsimikas, who's a specialist.
I want to see Jordan play in Trent's position and see if he can do it. And that might change my opinion on whether on the whole sell or no sell, because I think if he's an understudy for that right attacking eight, if he's like our second choice behind Szoboszlai, I'm a little concerned about that, because I don't think he's a perfect stylistic fit for what we're looking to do. Is he cover for Fabinho, cover for Trent? Okay. Is he cover for, I don't know, God, right-sided centre-half? I'd be a little bit more concerned about that, but it's not, that wouldn't be the end of the world. At a real, like, you're having a mad injury crisis or you need to give someone a big break. But until I know more about what he does, I'm with you, I wouldn't sell him, because in my head right now, he does cover all of those positions, and that's quite... There's more value in that than what you'd get for selling him.
I don't know if he's going to be first choice cover in any of those roles. I think he might be second choice cover in them all. I think he's probably behind Elliot and Szoboszlai for the attacking eight on the right. In terms of the six, he's definitely Fabinho, possibly Pacetic at full fitness, maybe the one we sign, whoever that is. In terms of Trent's role, it's obviously Trent, and then, I don't know, maybe possibly a Bradley, remains to be seen, but maybe even a Joe Gomez in that role, not in terms of going into midfield, slightly differently. So I think that's also okay. Like, if Henderson's just third choice cover, second choice cover in a number of different roles, sounds.
We only
like,
got about 35 games being not second exactly, choice in all those positions.
Yeah, it's fine. That's okay. Like, listen, it's not going to be okay for him. We've all kind of referenced the point. He's going to want more than that. But for us as a football club, let's be greedy. Let's be selfish. Let's be ruthless and say, yeah, you're not first choice anymore, but can you do a job when I'm called upon? Yeah, you can. That's fine by us. Yeah, absolutely.
Also, I saw some chat about, like, your captain's got a start, and not at all. Club captain is the club captain. We've had this. Did we have it when Jamie Redknapp was injured forever and he was the club captain?
And I think if your captain is so important, if you need someone like that on the pitch, then you've probably not got the right mentalities on the play and the rest of your squad. If you need one guy to be the all important captain, then you've probably done wrong elsewhere.
Yeah.
And I was sorry, the bad teams have their best players as captain.
That's a general rule. And you think about the players that we've signed. Cody Gakpo was a captain, wasn't he? Did they say Gakpo again?
I think it was a pacton, I can't remember.
we've had loads of pactons across the field. Everyone we signed's been a pacton at some point.
Szoboszlai is captain hungry.
I think Trent for me looks, when he plays in that role he's been playing in, he looks like captain team material, but that's only because I recognise captain team material as the guy who covers every braid of glass.
Yes!
Braid of glass!
Every braid of hair.
Every bit of that.
The Gerard Beckham type one, but I just want the team to sort it out for themselves. The armband matters off the pitch because you need a hierarchy.
Yeah.
And when you're organising and you're disciplined and you're setting rules, and they talk about things like who collects the fines and all that stupid, which sounds like stupid petty admin shit, but that's all part of building a successful squad. You need all this kind of stuff as well. Now, I'm not suggesting Hendo's role is now he stands by the axe door rattling a tin and ask people to drop stuff in the swear jar.
Sheriff of Nottingham.
But he won't want to be that anyway, so it's going to be interesting to see how he reacts.
I did do some of that slightly with my captain. So like last couple of seasons when Harvey Elliott's been there, if it was an away game, I'd be more inclined to choose Jordan Henderson. I don't know why, whether it was to do with the atmosphere, whether it's to single players out, how a crowd can be, and whether, you know, it's a case of if something went wrong in that game, he doesn't have the crowd to get a hit to lift them up. So I did kind of use things like that. Now it's probably less so because of the quality that we've added in those positions. But last couple of years, I've defo sat there and I've thought, it's the same with Bobby Firmino. There's potentially been, you know, systems or games in which Bobby Firmino's been not being fit. Like the Champions League final, he wasn't 100% fit. But I was like, no, I want him on there more than anyone because it suits the system better. He will play the position better, he fits everyone perfectly, and I've chose people like that more than others, and that has had Jordan Henderson in instead of Harvey Elliott due to him being a captain. But that won't be the same next season for me, that, I don't think.
Just to wrap up and reiterate, I guess what we've been talking about, priorities then, do we think this left side of centre half is priority number one right now?
I think I said 2 or 3 weeks ago, I imagine two midfielders, left side of the centre-half, then back to a midfielder if you've got the dough.
Mm. Yep.
Stand by it.
And do you think that dough will come from player sales then?
Judging by what the talk is, yeah. Probably.
Yeah.
Like the other thing is, I don't know where are we with them stupid 3-year accountancy periods? Does anyone know?
I've been reading the stuff on the Athletic about the Man United one for the next show. Off the top of my head.
Because no. You can totally make a loss, can't you? It's mm-hmm. just that you've got to make less than a £15 million loss based on the 3-year accountancy period, don't you?
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, Liverpool could absolutely lose £90 million or £100 million this year, as long as they recoup it in the next two, if that's how the years fall. So that's why I asked the question. Yeah. So I don't know. And then there's other ways, isn't there, of messing around with this type of stuff as well? Like, will the launching of the Anfield Road be taken off it because you're investing in infrastructure? Mm-hmm. Does the AXA affect previous years? It probably did, and all that type of stuff. So it's quite interesting. And ultimately, what I think it means is if you can secure the funding, which is you alluded to earlier about the Szoboszlai release clause, if you can secure the funding, that kind of doesn't really matter. And ultimately, FSG could put more money in terms of shares anyway to negate those losses and all that type of stuff. That we know that, you know, you spoke to Kieran Maguire, so you're probably the best person to talk about this, but Liverpool potentially looking for 10-15% investment. Yeah. That will have a direct impact on Liverpool because it won't be in FSG, will it? It will be in Liverpool Football Club. And therefore, that will change the entire outlook. So if that gets done, we could spend loads of dough.
Hopefully.
That might be more important than player sales.
Yeah, quite possibly. Yeah, and it's funny because I spoke up to Kieran about Mike Gordon sort of going back to day-to-day duties, and he essentially said that suggests to him that he's narrowed the search down to a select number of parties, and now he's doing due diligence on those parties and defining what the best way to move forwards is. But yeah, 10-15%, like you say, and £300 to £400 million for that 10-15% share. And they'll be trying to work out whether that means to get a director on the board and all that kind of stuff. We're still a long way off from this being done yet, but to the point, I suppose if FSG or the football club know that money is coming, let's just say November for argument's sake, that in November we're going to get this influx of £300 to £400 million, then can we afford to be a little bit more flamboyant in the market this time because they know they're going to get it back further down the line, etc.
Makes me just life experience is never spend money before it turns, because it's you're guaranteeing something will go tits up between now and then. But
how much do you reckon we'll get for Thiago? Sorry, if
I'd like 32, being specific.
I think that's a good number, actually.
A million every year he's been on the planet, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd take that.
Right, sad. Okay.
Yeah, a million for every injury he's had in the last 12 months.
Oh, we'd be
rich. Wow.
Right, if you want to get that interview that Dan was talking about there, if you want more transfer content, and if you want all three episodes ad-free of Bobby Firmino, Best in the World, our documentary series, go to redmenplus.com.
What's stuck on the bottom of you? Slides
it
down.
No, it's just his tag. Does it take them off?
Sorry, Paul.
It's not great podcast. If you want to get 50% off a yearly subscription to redmenplus.com, choose a captain yearly subscription and use the code Bobby, B-O-B-B-Y, 50% off, get a full year at half price and fill your boots with all the amazing transfer and documentary content this summer and beyond. Anyway, that's it for the Redmen Originals for this week. Thank you so much, everyone. You guys are all splendid. We'll get to the bottom of Dan's sliders off air.
And we'll return 15 seconds,
hell, next week for another Redmen Originals podcast. Ta-da. Hey, so pre-season is just around the corner for the mighty Reds, but if you want to spend your days, weeks and hours celebrating a Liverpool legend, then check out Bobby Firmino, Best in the World, our three-part documentary series, episodes 2 and 3, exclusively streaming on redmenplus.com right now, with full interviews from so many of our amazing contributors, including the Liverpool skipper, Jordan Henderson, the greatest goal scorer the club's ever seen, Ian Rush, and a hell of a lot more right now. Go to redmenplus.com. All episodes of Bobby Firmino, Best in the World, streaming today.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.